This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. We've all stayed alive. You have no idea how important.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network, and today I'm bringing you another important interview from an old friend of mine who we will be speaking with in just a moment, talking about the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, which by now I'm assuming everybody who is going to hear this broadcast is aware. She has been found guilty on 5 of 6 counts in the ongoing trial. We're going to talk with my buddy Kriston Harris to talk about his experience as one of the few independent journalists actually on site reporting from the trial, also having some interesting involvements, having his Airbnb broken into while reporting and while taking photos of Ghislaine's sister, Isabel Maxwell, and just so much more of his work that he's been doing. I really want you guys to pay attention and to support his work. He's blowing up right now. Apparently just did an appearance on Glenn Beck. He's got the BBC reaching out to him, doing lots of good things. Before we bring on Kriston, though, I want to remind you guys, our website is theconsciousresistance.com. Theconsciousresistance.com, guys. This is where you can find all of my content, documentaries you can watch for free, books you can download for free, essays, articles, interviews, etc. You can find all of our social media. You can also search Maxwell and Epstein if you want to, and you can go through and see all the different reports we've been doing over the years, talking to people about this issue, including my documentary that we released back in, all the way back in November 2018 called Bringing Down Jeffrey Epstein. Some of you might have seen it on YouTube before it got deleted, had nearly 1 million views. Bringing Down Jeffrey Epstein, looking into the intelligence connections, the so much more, which was not explored in this trial. So to get a first-person, first-hand perspective of the trial, we're going to have my buddy Kriston on now. How are you doing, brother?
Hey, Derek. How you doing? Thanks for having me on. You wouldn't believe how many times your names came, or I brought up your name in the last 4 weeks when we were talking about child trafficking. And I was like, have you guys heard of Derek Bros? He did research into the Finders cult, and some people did. They're like, yeah, I can you put me in touch with him? And we started talking about Operation Flicker and a lot of the things that stem around government corruption, MK Ultra Monarch program, conditioning and grooming, and it all ties together because it almost seemed like Jeffrey Epstein went to the MK Ultra School of Grooming. He had it down to a science, and that's what I learned throughout the trial as one of the few people that attended every day of the trial. I did not miss a single day of the trial. I was there in the courtroom, and I even got to be in the room with Ghislaine Maxwell for a short moment on one of the slower days on a Saturday when literally there were 4 people in the courthouse.
Let me start there. Thank you, Kriston, for sharing that, because that's one of the first things I wanted to ask you, because I know, look, go ahead right now, clear up the rumors. She was really in the courtroom. You saw her firsthand. She was really there.
Well, it's interesting because there's now this big leftist movement called Blue Anon, which is opposite of QAnon, and they have a lot of bizarre conspiracies, like Kyle Rittenhouse's trial was green screened, and Ghislaine Maxwell wasn't in the trial, and the jurors weren't showing up because they're being threatened, and nobody's allowed in the courthouse or courtroom, or no media is allowed in there at all, which I debunked in the first day when that came out. I think it was Tim Kennedy who spread that misinformation. I don't believe it was intentional, but he said that no media was allowed in the courtroom. And I'm like, oh crap, I just raised, a couple thousand, I think it was like $1,200 to go out to New York City to cover this. I better call and find out. So I emailed the courthouse multiple times. I got a response and they said, yes, media is allowed, just no electronics, no laptops, no cell phones, unless you're a privileged lawyer or you are like a federal agent, then they allow those individuals to have their phones in the courthouse and in the courtroom. Some people got around it because there was a second courthouse with an overflow for media that allowed electronics after the first day. They decided that would be necessary so people could tweet out in real time. But the courthouse where the trial actually took place, no electronics were allowed. Matthew from Inner City Press was the one that told us about the second courthouse, and it was very interesting. But yes, Ghislaine Maxwell, in her entirety, in her disgusting, gross old age, was in there drinking and fraternizing with her sister and brother who were sitting in the row behind the lawyers. Like, I've never seen so much interaction between, you know, a defendant and the people that are onlooking and viewing the trial. So there is a lot of things I found interesting. Sure.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and get into that. Before we go any further, I do want to shout out your website, though, just to let everybody know about the work you're doing. It's therundownlive.com, guys. Go check out Chris Don's work there and him, and he's just constantly pumping out so much content. As I said, getting contacted by the BBC and Glenn Beck. And I want to mention at least just what you – I think you just broadcasted today before our interview here. You did your own Maxwell Roundtable with several other journalists who were also present there. And I encourage everybody to go check that out at therundownlive.com. But let's get into it. Like you said, I mean, for one, I want to again commend you and give thanks to you and others who spent time out there, especially this time of year, man. I reported on another trial back in 2013, the Ross Ulbricht Silk Road trial that took place in federal courts in New York City in the middle of January. And it is a cold time, especially, I mean, you're from Milwaukee, you're used to it. I'm from Houston. It doesn't get that cold. So it's definitely like it's a lot to deal with, not only the money, the time, the energy away from home, the exhaustion. So I appreciate all of your efforts. But even more than that, man, one of the things that I think stands out among others that you did and that the Rundown Live did is that you were producing the transcripts from every single day of the courtroom. So tell us a little bit about that, whatever you want to share, and maybe even just some things that stand out that you saw in the transcripts that maybe didn't get reported in the mainstream.
Yeah, so we are the only news source outlet that I know of that has published the transcripts. And every day there's 300 pages. It costs $1.25 per page. So we had to surgically select. Me being in the courthouse, I made it easier which ones were fluff and which ones were not. Some people were just there for foundation. Yeah, that's Jeffrey Epstein's house. Yeah, he had two planes. This is what those two planes look like. Yeah, that's his home. That's what it looked like. You know, just a bunch of fluff that really wasn't real. The meat and potatoes wasn't real pertinent to, you know, it wasn't really groundbreaking news. So what I did is I pulled the transcripts from each of the victim testimonies, first starting with Jane Doe, and then Katie, and then Carolyn. All three of those are anonymous names. We now know that Jane Doe is Nadia Borlin from Days of Our Lives, a star that's been there for, I think, like 20 years. She's been an actress. And then finally, Annie Farmer, whose sister, Maria Farmer, has been retweeting some of my tweets and my transcripts that I have been procuring, including the Butler transcript, which was very important because it collaborates and confirms the other four transcripts, as well as the Kelly Maguire raid on the Epstein estate, which it brings illumination upon a lot of bizarre coincidences that happened during the raid, as well as Jeffrey Epstein being tipped off. You know, his hard drive was missing out of his computer. There's other interesting things that were really detailed. But let's start with the idea of grooming. As we know, you're a big researcher in occultism, and not only occultism, but trafficking, which sometimes go hand in hand when you start talking about these things. And grooming is the process that starts with a grooming interview. So Jane Doe, as we know, is Nadia from Days of Her Life. She was first interviewed at the age of 13 at an Interlochen, Michigan talent summer camp where the elitist children go, the next actresses and actors and musicians and, you know, artists of the world. They send their kids there for the summer for $4,000, and they learn how to harness their strengths on art and drama and theater and all these different things. And she was attending, and Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein sat her down. They recognized her and sat her down. And Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine went on to ask her questions. How was her home situation? Well, they found out that her father just died. Her father was a famous conductor, and Jeffrey Epstein knew him. Also, that they were homeless now, that there's a lot of problems in the home, and they were living in a friend's pool home, sharing a bedroom with her two brothers and her mother, whom it seems she didn't have a fantastic relationship with at the time. So it wasn't long before they could identify triggers that would allow them to become the hero, come in and swoop in, pay for college, pay for vocal lessons, pay for acting lessons, whatever it might be for all these women. And they all have a very similar story of a grooming interview. Then comes the grooming process. So they invited Jane Doe, over to Epstein's little West Palm Beach house. And he asked her to sing, and he interviewed her mother and talked to her and explained that he takes care of young girls and that don't have the money or aren't privileged enough to be able to afford the schooling that is required in order for them to become famous. And what he would do is he would prop that up with the fact that, you know, he is friends with Les Wexner. You know, he's Victoria's Secret. She can be a Victoria's Secret model. Or I know this person in the movie industry. I can get you an acting role. Or I know this person in the music industry. He used that to become a hero and somewhat of a positive figure in these girls' lives where they felt like they relied on him. Along with that came the subliminal and subtle sexual, I would say, desensitization at the young age. So now Nadia is 14, Jane Doe, and she's going there every other week. And she notices that there's nude paintings in the bathroom and that there's, pictures of naked girls throughout the house. And one day she notices that there's nude women in the pool. And Ghislaine Maxwell says, well, you know, it's time to massage Jeffrey Epstein. So Ghislaine would actually educate these girls and teach them how Jeffrey Epstein liked to be massaged. All right. And that means all over the body. And things accelerated on the second massage where Epstein brought Jane Doe, Nadia, to the pool house, dropped his drawers, and then gratified himself on her. Much like what we hear with Harvey Weinstein, a very similar behavior. And then later on, she went on to say that it started to incorporate more women and they became orgies. And Ghislaine Maxwell and other girls, they'd all be massaging Jeffrey and would lead to fellatio and then later on intercourse. And she was having intercourse with them at least until she was 22. And she fell in love with a boyfriend. And Jeffrey Epstein jealously called her up from California wanting to see her, saying, don't forget who took care of your family, because he was giving her, you know, hundreds of dollars to give to her mom every time she visited. And her mother was using it to pay bills and rent. So as you can see, they really set up the grooming process. Not only that, he would take these young girls to movies that would have, they'd be like rated R with sexually explicit things, the things that have sexual innuendo in Disney that we know about, you know, all these subtle deprogramming before they would get to the massage era, because they would slowly groom them to be desensitized to the point where massaging Jeffrey seemed normal. And then all of a sudden you're massaging him all over, and then they're getting in the massages and massaging these young girls. And that was the almost echoed story, not just with Jane Doe, but with Katie, with Carolyn. Carolyn was getting paid $300 a massage, you know, and her boyfriend was dropping her off. And
Kristen, I want to pause you right there. Thank you so much. I mean, you're sharing so much vital information. I want to let everybody know, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Kristen Harris of the Rundown Live, therundownlive.com. He's been in person at the Maxwell trial the last few weeks and reporting firsthand, as we mentioned a couple minutes ago, producing the daily transcripts, which gave a lot of detail that you might not find in the corporate media. I mean, this is one of the things that I, and I think you as well, know, Kristen, that when you cover trials firsthand, you're in there day to day, you really see how much the corporate media leaves out. You know, they'll just give you, like you said, some foundational statements or a headline or something, but they don't really get to the deeper issues of what's being presented, especially in a very important trial like this. Now, you mentioned a couple things I want to respond to for a moment. You mentioned Les Wexner and the connection to Les Wexner. For those who are not familiar with that or haven't seen our reports, I invite you to visit theconsciousresistance.com, search Les Wexner, who was from Victoria's Secret. And you can see the reports I've done, as well as an interview with Whitney Webb, kind of getting into those issues. And Les Wexner himself connected to mafia, going back to Ohio, just connected to the Mega Group, which is an ultra rich group of a bunch of, Jewish donors, for whatever, you know, however you want to take that or think about that. That's it. That is what it is. And, you know, there was so much that wasn't discussed, though, in this trial. You covered a lot of the good things that were discussed. I mean, good things in terms of truth getting out. Obviously, horrible things that these young girls, now adult women, had to go through, the grooming process and things of that nature. We know that the Maxwell defense basically was, she's being tried for Jeffrey Epstein's crimes. She has no connection to this. She helped him out a little bit, but clearly she wasn't involved. We all know that's a lie. Anybody who spent time going down these rabbit holes and researching that knows how integral Maxwell and her family were to this network of traffickers and to pedophiles. And that goes back to her father and his connections to British and Israeli intelligence, her sister Isabel, who we'll talk more about in a moment. There's so much that wasn't explored, and I want to kind of key in on that for a moment. There's two questions I have. One of them, and I think you sort of touched on it, was about the fact that the FBI specifically had already been warned in the past about what Epstein was up to, right? I mean, I think that this came out in the trial that some of the computers that were seized had already been seen by the FBI, that it wasn't new things that they were gathering. I don't know if you came across that information. I was reading through some of the transcripts that specifically mentioned the FBI having access to the computers that were seized. And it does appear, at least from what I interpreted, that this means the FBI was aware they might have had possession of the computers and then gave them back to Epstein. We know for sure, though, that Epstein's people knew that searches of his home and the original arrest were coming and that there was a lot of data missing. Can you speak to any of that as far as foreknowledge or the computers that were seized and what you learned during the trial?
Yeah, Special Agent Kelly McGuire transcript. It's on the rundownlive.com. And in this transcript details how they sawed open his safe and there was hard drives and binders full of CDs and DVDs and they had to leave them behind, right? And when they came back, I think it was within 24 hours, they were all gone. Who would have gone surprise? You know, who would have thought that they'd be gone? And so they literally contacted the Epstein estate and the lawyers and they procured them. Who knows if they were tampered with or changed or altered or were different hard drives. Not only that, they had totes of hard drives, totes of binders of CDs and DVDs. And when they examined them, Special Agent Kelly McGuire said that there was already evidence tape on them. And so the judge asked her, do you know where this evidence tape came from and what it's from? And she said, no, she did not. And I find that unbelievable that the FBI wouldn't have on record with the evidence tape information on what was on those DVDs or CDs or hard drives and what agency group acquired them and investigated them. That just blows my mind that something like that could even happen. And it was one of those things that raised your eyebrows and made you go, not only that he was tipped off when they were going to raid the home and he wasn't there. So, you know, it was a very interesting story, very interesting transcript. And I think to answer your question, out of 40,000 videos and images the prosecution had at their fingertips, they only used 40, and the images that they chose were like, this is Ghislaine Maxwell massaging Jeffrey Epstein's foot on an airplane. This is Ghislaine Maxwell with Jeffrey Epstein. In fact, I think the prosecution did a very poor job throughout most of the trial, although they did kind of redeem themselves and finish strong. They didn't bring any hard evidence with them to actually support their claims of trafficking. The jury had to rely solely on the four testimonies of the victim, the testimonies of the flight logs and the pilots and the butler, amongst other people. They didn't decide to bring on somebody like Virginia Roberts, who would have detailed, you know, Prince Andrew being trafficked to other individuals and would have listed some high profile individuals. No, in fact, when they had names that weren't redacted on the flight logs that they could have said, the prosecution decided not to say them at all, unless it was Donald Trump or Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that is probably, to me, the biggest travesty of this whole thing. I mean, for one, some level of acknowledgement that hopefully for the victims of Jeffrey Epstein and Maxwell, hearing that she has been found guilty feels like some sense of justice. I'm not trying to take that away from anybody. I don't want to take that away from anybody, while acknowledging that we still don't have anywhere near the full story. I hope that the victims somewhere out there do feel some sense of justice. From what I'm seeing, including from the Farmer family and from Virginia, you mentioned, they definitely don't see this as justice. They know that this is a whitewash happening right now, and that the truth isn't coming out. And of course, we still have the matter of sentencing to find out what kind of sentence Maxwell, you know, ends up getting, if she even makes it that far, right? There's a lot of people who are really concerned right now that she's going to get Epstein'd, and, you know, that'll tie everything nicely into a little bow and be like, well, you know, we thought we're on to something, but Epstein killed himself. Maxwell went to prison or killed herself or whatever. It's all over. And done. But again, this story, and you know, Kristan, we've been doing this for a while now. We've been talking about child trafficking, these different networks, and how it goes up to the highest levels. And when Epstein was arrested, many of us felt like, oh my God, is this real? Is this even happening? I can't believe this is even making the mainstream press. And then very quickly we found out, okay, this is just, you know, it's a con job. We're not going to get the real story. We're not going to learn about the deepest details. And it's not just about, oh, which celebrities were they connected to? The point is that powerful people, politicians, celebrities, scientists, media people, were all associated with the Epstein-Maxwell network. And it goes back decades, you know, and that none of those people are going to be held accountable for whatever happened. In fact, probably many of them are probably sitting pretty comfy right now and thinking like, okay, cool, Maxwell's going to go down, Epstein's dead, I don't have anything to worry about, right? I think that to me is probably the most troubling aspect of that. And I want to ask you more of a kind of a journalistic question. Did you find that when it comes to the other independent media, as well as the corporate media, I saw some people like yourself and Addy Ads and other out there like confronting Maxwell and asking questions. But generally speaking, do you think that the other media out there is aware of this? Or was it, you know, was there even any discussion on the sidelines about the intelligence connections and just how that was being left out of there? You know, how was that?
There was really no real questions by the mainstream media. In fact, by the third day, there was almost no cameras outside, except for at the end of the night, two or three would pop up. And I was a witness in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial for my coverage in the Kenosha unrest. I was there with an hour of Jacob Blake being shot because I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And there were tents outside the Kyle Rittenhouse trial every day. There was 100 or plus media there every day. There were satellites and vans there every day. And I mean, droves of them. We're talking about 30 or 40 or 50 of these satellite vans that are out there. By the fifth or sixth day of the second week, there was one camera stand outside the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. In fact, when the jury deliberation started, all this media popped up from all over the place. I looked at Addy Ads and I was like, ah, bro, they're finally here. And they didn't know who to actually film. They were like chasing regular people coming out of the courthouse because they thought they were in a trial. They couldn't even recognize who the lawyers were or the prosecution or the defense. They were chasing down random people, falling on their butt. And you know who was asking the questions? It was Addy Ads. It was the Rundown Live. I was asking her about her ties to the World Economic Forum. And if, the Bilderbergers are all now just World Economic Forum czars. And, because there's been no Bilderberg meeting or group meeting in the last 2 years. So you have to ask about Klaus Schwab's plan to, eliminate all private property, Adam Weishaupt's wet utopian dream. And she was all on board. She sits on the World Economic Forum technological department there. She does something very important. I started asking her about synthetic biology, AI, life extension. And then at one point while doing this, a New York Times photographer got into it with a guy next to me, allegedly. And then I said, well, who's harassing Ghislaine Maxwell? Because a New York Times photographer who's known for being controversial, who's a ultra leftist, said, you know, you are. And I said, me? I said, you're the one taking photos, talking loud. And she goes, you are the one harassing her. I said, are you sure? Because she started telling the other guy he was harassing her. Now we were both harassing her. And all I was doing was breaking down who she was, asking her about the World Economic Forum. And then Isabel Maxwell decides, right after she says it's harassment, she pulls out her phone and here it is. She's going to look right at me in my eyes and then take my picture. And then the next day I was robbed. Coincidence.
Yeah, let's before you get into that, I definitely, that's where I want to start to wrap up. But for those who are listening and have no idea, we've mentioned Isabel Maxwell a few times, and those who are going to be watching this on screen rather than just hearing the audio, what we're showing on screen right now is Kristan and the other journalists surrounding Isabel Maxwell, who was Ghislaine Maxwell's sister, their father, Robert Maxwell, a known spy. And they were out there along with her brother every day. And as you said, she takes a picture directly of you. You and some other people are getting accused of harassing her. And then we'll get into a moment in the break-in situation. But I do want to, for those who want some more background and want to understand, well, why does Isabel matter, right? And I'm sure, Kristan, you might have some things to say about this. But I want to point to what I think is the best resource I've seen, and that is unlimitedhangout.com, Whitney Webb's website. If you just search Isabel Maxwell, she did an investigative article on Isabel last summer, Isabel Maxwell, Israel's backdoor into Silicon Valley, showing how the Maxwell family is so connected to Silicon Valley, to all the tech companies. And then she's got another one, The Maxwell Family Business, Espionage, and most recently, Meet Ghislaine, Daddy's Girl. So if you're unfamiliar with The Maxwell Family, I encourage people to do some deep dives and to dig into the, you know, just what they're all about. But let's get into the next point here, which was you as a journalist on the scene covering this important trial. And as you said, you had some moments interacting with Ghislaine's sister, Isabel, filming her, being accused of harassing her. And then your Airbnb that you were staying in while reporting on the trial was broken into and your computer was stolen. And just kind of run down what the events. You mentioned that you were taking pictures of her. What happened after that?
Well, so essentially, Isabel Maxwell is known for creating Software Magellan and Promise Without an E, which was used to steal the atomic bomb secrets and disseminate those to Israel, allegedly. I think that was on Unlimited Hangout where they discussed that on Whitney Webb's website. While I was at the next day of the trial, and it was the last day before break, so we all hung out, you know, all of us independent journalists went out for a few frosty beverages. I got back about 11:30, 12 o'clock, and I put in my number in the keypad in the back entrance, because there's a separate entrance for the front to the back, because there's two Airbnbs there. And the door from the kitchen to my bedroom was ajar. I locked it and it was ajar. And I looked and I thought that was weird. There was somebody eating in the kitchen. And I talked to him and I was like, oh, hey, how you guys doing here? Like, did you guys open my door by chance? And she goes, no. She goes, but the landlord called and asked us if we put the air conditioner on the ground. And I thought that was weird. So I went in my room and I saw, I turned around and looked at the details. And I saw that the closet door was off the hinge. And what's weird is the only thing that was missing from my room was my laptop. There was a full bottle of whiskey, unopened, I had for my birthday. You know, I was treated as my birthday just prior, and I wanted to celebrate. There was some marijuana, because marijuana is legal in New Jersey. I thought I'd partake, right? There was a $350 set of headphones. But that was all right there in plain sight. So if you're a homeless guy and you're breaking in to steal stuff, you're not grabbing that bottle of whiskey. You're not grabbing the pot. You're not grabbing the headphones. You're just going to take a laptop in under 90 seconds, take out the air conditioner from the front Airbnb, go through the front Airbnb, go through the kitchen, break down my door, take the laptop and leave in under 90 seconds, and that's all you're going to grab. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I'm going to play the clip now, Kristan. I know that you just basically described what's happening, but while people are watching it on screen, maybe you can kind of walk us through this.
I called the guy who owns the Airbnb, and he sent me this video. And at least he was wearing his mask, right? So here this guy comes in, and there's even sound for it. You can hear when he leaves, somebody starts a car. And so he sits here and he fidgets for like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, trying to get the air conditioner out of the window. And what you're going to see is in about 2.5 minutes, he's going to come out and he's going to have my laptop in a green laptop case, and he's going to walk out with it. And that's all he'll have.
So I was watching through this clip. I mean, this is pretty crazy to watch. Like, this is in the middle of the day, right? I mean, it says 3:45 p.m. Right.
And
so this
guy walks up.
And again, how did they know you weren't going to be there as well? That's
I'd be at the trial. They'd see me at the trial and they'd know I'm there.
Sure. That'd
be
the only thing. So somebody who clearly knew that you were covering this trial, there's no way this is a random occurrence, right? For everybody who's watching on the screen, I mean, you can see what's happening. Yeah, I mean, all possibilities, right? It could be a totally random coincidence occurrence, but it seems at the least odd that the day after this confrontation, if you will, with Isabel Maxwell, that this happens to your place and your computer, as you said, is the only thing taken. You know, it's a valuable item. Computers can get a little bit of money if you go pawn it off. Maybe they didn't want the weed, they didn't want the alcohol, but it is odd, because you would assume, as any journalist, that a lot of your work is in your computer.
Which it was. And if anything, I think, this coincidence, and if it wasn't a coincidence, was made to make me feel uncomfortable, make me feel threatened. But I refused to allow it to do those things. The laptop was actually gifted to me by a person you may know, Justin Wallace. He's a really great guy from We Are Change. He does We Are the New Media now. And he's out, you know, he's an East Coast guy I met doing coverage of protests out in the East Coast. And he said, he let me have it. He's like, I make Hackintoshes, you know, and he goes, I can't sell them, but if you want it, you can have them. You have it. And I said, cool, that's awesome. And I've used it. Look, there's even people walking by. This guy's in the house and there's people walking by. No one notices that the air conditioner's underground. They don't think it's weird or bizarre or anything like that. But as you know, and as it's coming up, you'll see him leave and get out and just start walking. And a
that's
few
what seconds. I'm saying. It seems pretty brazen. Like it's the middle of the day. Here he goes, green bag, and your laptop's in that bag.
Yep, that's it. That's wow. All that there is. And keep in mind, there's other things in that house that had value, you know. There's like TVs probably and other things that you could have taken, you know, just mind blown.
Yeah, brother, again, thank you so for the work that you put in there. How many weeks were you out there in New York?
4 weeks. And I came home for 3 days to film for a Kyle Rittenhouse documentary. But I came home I left that next day. I was already had my flight booked, and I went and traveled home for Christmas. And then, you know, going back for jury deliberation would have been a waste of money, because all you do is all the mainstream media was doing there was reading books in the courtroom. You know, because there's no electronics, magazines, books, and they're waiting for a note to be passed around once a day. And that's just a waste of money. You know, people donated. I want to be out there getting news, not spending $250 on a hotel a night and, you know, Subway and food and everything else. I want to save that money and use it for something else. Maybe the Julian Assange trial that's coming up.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there for that one for sure, brother. And that's how it goes. I mean, that's how independent media rolls, guys. If you value independent media, like the work Chris Don has done, you know, we're focused today on the Maxwell trial, but he was involved. You mentioned the Rittenhouse trial and that situation and so many other important events, as well as just constantly reporting through the Rundown Live. If you support this sort of independent media, I invite you to go over to therundownlive.com, give some support to the work that Chris Don's doing so he can continue to do this. And, you know, even on a bigger picture, as we're going into 2022, if you appreciate things like this, we need you to be out there in the streets. We need more independent media, probably more than ever, right? Like we're kind of the older generation of doing this in the 2010s, and now we need the next generation of independent media to continue to step up. And it's not always a financially rewarding thing. It's not always a you know, any sort of, like you said, you're staying in Airbnb, you're not staying in some lavish hotel, you're not getting paid lots of money like the corporate media. But if you really care about truth, if you care about getting out accurate information and you want to help people understand the world around you better, I invite those of you who've been sitting on the sidelines in recent years to step up in 2022 and join us on the front lines of the independent media. Anything else you want to offer today, brother?
Yeah. If you guys can check me out, I'm live 5 days a week on KGRA Radio. TheRundownLive.com has all the podcasts. If you want to donate, we have a GoFundMe. I think today's the last day or tomorrow's the last day of the GoFundMe. Buy me a slice of pizza or a soda or a coffee. You can donate on the GoFundMe, $5, $10, $20. Or if you want to help towards the laptop, you can donate more. That's on your heart. But we're 100% listener funded. I gave up a big six-figure job, not because you know, I didn't want to make money or anything like that, but it's because I wanted to follow my heart and do the right thing, because I was miserable every day working in a, you know, management position. This is allowing me to do what I'm supposed to be doing. And obviously I'm doing the right thing because we're having success. This is the way my crusader gene is telling me to go. And so we've been doing this day in and day out, living on a shoestring budget. Sometimes I don't know where rent's coming from. And keep in mind, I bartend to pay those bills. All the money that's donated usually goes right back into the Rundown Live. It might go towards something that we might need, unexpected things break, let's say, you know, having a laptop stolen. So those are the things we need to report on the ground. And I appreciate you guys out there for supporting Derek Bros. Support him too. I've known Derek for years and years and years and years. I even spoke with him in Milwaukee when he came around, and he gave a very impressionable speech on beating depression, amongst other things, which that makes you a hero in many people's book, because a lot of people can't beat depression. And here you are, you're like putting out rap albums and all this other cool stuff and doing your passions and your love. It's so cool, man. It's so neat, but it's so weird because our roles have changed. It's like I talked to Dan Dix. It's like he used to be the guy that used to come on the Rundown Live because he'd be out there. And now I'm that guy for you guys. And I'm glad I could repay it and be a volunteer for the people to represent them, and that the people trust my opinion, because I'm only human. I'm not some special agent journalist who has tons of credential in college. I'm all self-taught. I read my books, and people seem to trust me. And I want to say thank you to the people that do and donate me. And there are haters. There's people out there that are probably doing DoorDash, and that's all they do for a living, and they're happy with that, you know. But I want to do more with my life. I want to bring you guys truth, and it doesn't mean I'm perfect. Do your own research. Go to the Rundown Live. Read the transcripts. Don't take it verbatim from my word. You can read the words straight from the courthouse, and we paid $1.25 a page, and we got 1,000+ pages on the Rundown Live. All the transcripts are there. You can tune in Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. Central Standard Time to the Rundown Live.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for all your work, Kriston. Thank you for the kind words, brother. I very much appreciate your work. And guys, again, visit therundownlive.com. He is one of the only, if not the only, I think you are the only one with all the transcripts, at least, definitely with all of them. Go read the word yourself and spread the word. Spread this interview if you want to make sure other people hear the truth about what happened during the Maxwell trial. And we will continue to follow it as we await the sentencing. Until next time, guys, thank you for supporting. And remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free.
This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea